Okay, listener name, get ready, because we are diving deep into the world of psilocybin today.
Yeah, we're tackling some fascinating stuff with your source material.
Seriously, it's not every day we get hit with both a dense scientific review paper and a report that's advocating for some pretty major policy changes.
Definitely a hot-button issue, and for good reason.
So, where do we even begin with all this?
Well, before we get into the WHY, why don't we lay out exactly what we're dealing with here?
Sounds like a plan.
You've probably at least heard whispers of this whole psychedelic revolution happening in mental health, right?
Absolutely. Although I gotta say, when I hear psilocybin, my mind goes straight to, well,
yeah,
you know, a very specific image of the 60s, not exactly a clinical setting.
It's a common association for sure, but this paper we've got on the history of psilocybin really challenges that.
Oh, really?
Did you know that psilocybin has been used in spiritual and medicinal practices for, like, thousands of years?
Wow, serious.
Way before it became, you know, a cultural phenomenon in the 60s.
That's wild. So we're talking about a substance with a much richer history than a lot of people probably realize.
Oh, absolutely.
But if it's been around for so long, why is it only recently gaining traction in mainstream medicine?
Well, that's where this report from the Adam Smith Institute comes in.
Okay.
They lay out a pretty compelling argument, basically saying we're in the middle of a full-blown mental health crisis.
I mean, I can see that.
They cite some pretty alarming statistics, too.
Like what?
Like, even before the pandemic hit, nearly 1 in 5 adults in the UK had experienced some form of depression.
Wow, 1 in 5. That's huge.
It is. And they go on to highlight just how limited our current treatments really are.
Meaning
a significant chunk of people just don't respond well to traditional antidepressants.
Leaving them feeling stuck.
Exactly. Stuck and hopeless.
So we've got this gap in effective treatment options, and that's where psilocybin swoops in.
That's the idea.
But what makes it so potentially groundbreaking? What are we actually talking about here?
Well, we have to acknowledge that the research is still in its early stages.
For sure.
But what's got everyone so excited is that psilocybin, it doesn't just mask the symptoms like antidepressants often do. The scientific paper really digs into this, explaining how psilocybin might actually reset the brain's default mode network.
The what now?
The default mode network. It's the part of our brain that's always on, you know, associated with rumination, those looping negative thoughts.
Okay, I see.
So instead of just managing the symptoms on the surface, psilocybin might actually help people break free from those ingrained thought patterns.
Okay, now that's a game changer.
That's the theory.
Yeah.
And there's a growing body of evidence to back it up.
Really?
There's actually a fascinating anecdote in the report from a doctor who was just astounded by the transformation in one of his patients.
Oh, wow.
After just a single dose of psilocybin.
No way.
This patient had been struggling with severe depression for years. But after the treatment, he described this profound sense of peace and connection he hadn't felt in decades.
That's incredible. I can see why people are excited.
Yeah.
It's like offering hope where there wasn't any before.
Exactly.
But it's not just depression, is it?
No, not at all.
The report mentions psilocybin being studied for a bunch of other things, like addiction, anxiety, even cluster headaches.
It's true. The potential applications at this point seem pretty vast.
Wow.
And this is where the scientific paper gets even more interesting.
Okay, how so?
It explains that psilocybin isn't just interacting with one specific area of the brain.
Okay.
It's actually causing this cascade of changes in neural activity and connectivity.
Okay, so walk me through that. How does this cascade of changes actually work? This is where those serotonin receptors come in again, right?
You got it. The paper explains that psilocybin interacts with these serotonin receptors, specifically the 2A receptor subtype.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, this is where it gets a bit complex, but they use an analogy I think might help.
Okay, I like analogies.
Imagine your brain is like a city, right? With roads representing your thought patterns.
Okay, I'm with you.
And psilocybin comes in and kind of shakes things up, you know, allowing for new pathways and connections to be made.
So it's like it helps the brain break free from those well-worn ruts, those negative feedback loops.
Exactly.
And explore new, healthier ways of thinking and feeling.
That's the idea.
Fascinating.
And there's another crucial distinction the paper makes. They're careful to clarify that while psilocybin is what's found in the mushrooms themselves,
Okay. It
actually gets converted into psilocin in the body.
Psilocin? Oh.
And it's actually psilocin that interacts directly with those serotonin receptors in the brain.
Oh, I see. So psilocybin is like the precursor, and psilocin is the real MVP in the brain.
Exactly. And understanding that difference, that's key to really grasping how these therapeutic effects might be happening at a molecular level.
Wow, this is already blowing my mind, and we're just getting started.
Yeah, and we've got to address the elephant in the room here,
which is
this whole issue of regulation.
Right, right, because we've got all this potential for healing and transformation.
Absolutely.
But then there's this whole other side of things, the potential risks.
Of course.
The ethical considerations.
All of it.
The report kept mentioning Schedule 1.
Right. Well, that's a critical point.
And I have to admit, I'm a little fuzzy on what that actually means.
It's a common point of confusion, so don't worry.
Okay, good to know.
Basically, Schedule 1 means a substance is considered to have a high potential for abuse and no currently accepted medical use.
Wait, hold on. So they're saying psilocybin has no accepted medical use, but we just talked about all this research.
And that's the paradox right there.
It really is.
It's a huge point of contention, and the Adam Smith Institute is advocating hard for psilocybin to be rescheduled.
Why is that?
They're saying the Schedule 1 classification is a massive barrier to research.
So they're saying it's actually hindering scientific progress, preventing us from exploring these potentially life-changing treatments.
Precise.
Just because of how it's classified.
They argue that the current classification, it's based on outdated information.
Okay.
And that it just doesn't reflect the growing body of scientific evidence.
That shows its potential.
Exactly. And they go on to make a really interesting comparison.
So it's like they're saying psilocybin is stuck in this regulatory time warp while the science is racing ahead.
Exactly. And to illustrate their point, they bring up the example of cannabis. Remember how cannabis-based products for medicinal use, or CBPMs as they're often called, were once incredibly difficult to research due to their legal status?
Right. But then things started to change as more research emerged, highlighting the potential therapeutic benefits of cannabis.
Precisely. And that's the parallel the report draws. They argue that just like with CBPMs, rescheduling psilocybin could unlock a wave of new research, potentially leading to breakthroughs in mental health care much faster.
That makes a lot of sense. It seems like the potential benefits, both for individuals and for society as a whole, are too significant to ignore. But I also imagine there are concerns, right? I mean, we can't just overlook the potential risks and ethical considerations here.
You're absolutely right. And to be fair to both of your sources, they do acknowledge the need for a cautious and ethical approach to psilocybin research and therapy.
So what are some of the specific concerns? I imagine things like proper dosage, potential side effects, and ensuring responsible use are top of mind.
Absolutely. And the scientific paper dives into some of these factors. For one, it emphasizes that psilocybin therapy is not a one-size-fits-all solution. The paper stresses the importance of personalized approaches, taking into account factors like an individual's medical history, psychological makeup, and even their expectations going into the experience.
That makes sense. We're talking about a substance that can induce profound alterations in consciousness. It's not like taking an aspirin, right? The context and the individual's mindset going into it probably play a huge role.
You're hitting on a really important point. Both sources actually emphasize the importance of the therapeutic setting and the role of trained professionals in guiding individuals through these experiences. The report talks about the need for careful screening of participants in clinical trials, ensuring they are psychologically prepared and supported throughout the process.
So it's not just about administering a substance, it's about providing a holistic framework of care and integration.
Exactly. And this is where the ethical considerations come into sharp focus. Both sources underscore the need to proceed with caution, avoiding the pitfalls of overhyping psilocybin as a cure-all, while also acknowledging its potential to alleviate suffering.
It sounds like finding that balance is key, acknowledging the potential, while also being mindful of the risks and the need for ethical guidelines. But even if we get all of that right, there's still the question of access and affordability. We don't want to create a system where these potentially life-changing treatments are only available to the privileged few.
That's a crucial point, and something the report touches on as well. They highlight the potential economic benefits of psilocybin therapy, particularly if it proves to be more effective in the long run than current treatments. They argue that this could lead to significant cost savings for healthcare systems.
So there's this economic angle too, the potential for a psilocybin to not only improve individual lives, but also alleviate some of the burden on our healthcare systems.
Exactly. They even go as far as to say that the potential economic impact of wider psilocybin access could be significant, even comparing it to the burgeoning cannabis industry.
Wow, that's a bold statement. It sounds like we're talking about a potential paradigm shift, not just in healthcare, but also in how we view mental health and well-being as a society.
It's certainly a lot to unpack, but
yeah.
That's what makes this deep dive so fascinating.
I couldn't agree more. We've covered the history, the science, the potential benefits, the risks, the policy hurdles, and even the economic implications. But it all boils down to this: what does this all mean for you, listener name?
Right. We've thrown a lot of information your way, but sometimes the most valuable insights come from connecting the dots yourself.
Absolutely. So as we wrap up this deep dive, let's take a moment to reflect on what we've learned and, more importantly, what questions it sparks for you. We've explored how psilocybin might revolutionize mental health care, but it also forces us to confront some really big
Whether it's
questions.
about consciousness, the nature of healing, and the role of these powerful substances in our lives.
I think one of the most interesting things we've talked about is how people are having these, like, almost mystical experiences on psilocybin.
Right.
I mean, it's one thing to say, okay, it might help with depression or anxiety, but then you have this whole other layer of people reporting these profound, even spiritual
It
experiences.
really makes you question, what is healing even? Are
Exactly.
we just talking about making symptoms go away?
Right.
Or is it something deeper than that? Like a total shift in how you see yourself, how you relate to the world?
That's the big question, isn't it?
It really is.
And it's something for you, listener name, to chew on.
Yeah, definitely.
This deep dive has been quite a journey. I mean, we've gone from ancient history to cutting-edge
And
science.
somewhere in there, maybe a little bit of philosophy too.
Maybe so.
But seriously, the research on psilocybin is still going strong, and the conversation around it is really just getting started.
One thing's for sure, this isn't just some scientific debate happening in a vacuum.
Not at all.
It touches on culture, philosophy, even spirituality.
It's deeply personal, too.
Absolutely.
And ultimately, how we decide to move forward with these substances as individuals and as a society, it's going to shape so much.
Like how we view mental health.
Our understanding of consciousness itself, even
Yeah, it's a lot.
it is.
That's
And like
a.
with any powerful tool, we have to approach it carefully
For
first.
sure. Gotta be mindful of both the risks and the potential benefits.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Jose, listener name, as you're out there navigating this whole complex world of psilocybin,
Yeah, keep asking the tough questions.
stay informed.
Keep an open mind, most importantly.
Well said. That's it for us this week, but we'll be back soon with another deep dive into the world of cutting-edge science and ideas.